Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jones. Bowden.
He's got it.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. The Ashes is almost upon us. In fact, if we're in England, it's one sleep to the Ashes. Simon Mann, two sleeps to the Ashes, I suppose.
Yep, two sleeps to the Ashes. Monday night, Tuesday night, then it all gets underway. Wednesday morning, it's midnight England time or UK time on Tuesday. So on Test Match Special, we're going to have an hour build up. So we're on air at 11 o'clock on Tuesday night UK time. And of course, that is 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning in Australia. And you know, all the preliminaries are nearly over. Not that there have been stacks of preliminaries this time. It's been a really old build up to the series. But the news today, the main news today, no Perth Test Match. That's been taken away from the new ground in Perth because of the COVID regulations. They just did not match what Cricket Australia thought were acceptable to get the teams in, all the broadcasting staff, etc. as well. So no Perth Test Match. We still don't know where that fifth Test Match is going to be. It could be in Hobart, could be at the MCG, could be at Sydney, could be at Canberra. It looks like Hobart against Melbourne day-nighter. That seems the most likely option at the moment. But it's really weird going into this series where we don't know where all the games are going to be played. But we do know the first test is going to be played at the Gabba. And we saw our first photograph of the Gabba pitch today and it looked pretty green. But I think you can make a mistake a little bit if you look at a pitch too early on. I remember Ricky Ponting doing that, didn't he? In Edgbaston 2005, he looked at the pitch a couple of days beforehand and thought it was going to do all sorts. Of course, by the time the game started, it actually sort of, it was actually a pretty good surface and flattened and dried out. So, it can be a danger looking at a pitch too early.
Definitely, and the spectre of Nasser Hussain putting Australia in Brisbane in what 2001 was it, and also Alan Border putting England in at the Gabba in 1986, both of the times ending in misery. So, put them in at your peril at the Gabba, even if the pitch is looking a bit green. We'll hear from Michael Atherton today, actually, who, of course, is one of the captains who's played out in Australia and captained England against Australia. He played in seven Ashes series and didn't win a single one, though he was unlucky to play against probably the best Australian team of all time. We'll also hear from Joe Root, the current captain, his thoughts just before this Test match starts. And actually, like you were saying the other day, Simon, it's been the weirdest build-up because there hasn't been that verbal or literary sparring in the press either.
No, not much at all. Ian Chappell weighed in a little bit today saying Joe Root should bat at three. It's ridiculous. He doesn't bat at three. He also said he's not a very good captain. So in a way, sort of a bit of sledge, a little bit, well, a bit of sledge has come from Chappelli, who is a very... who has very forthright opinions on the game. And, you know, you could argue Joe Root should bat at three, and you could argue that Joe Root is not a great tactician. One of the things he said is about captaining in Australia is you need to be imaginative captaining in Australia, because, you know, the game does go quite flat. The Kookaburra ball, we've talked about it a lot, the game does go quite flat, and you need to find a way to get wickets yours in a situation like that. So you do need to have that imagination.
Yeah, and obviously it's afflicted Australia at times too. If you think back to that 2010-11 tour, when England in their second innings got to 517 for one, Alistair Cook making a double hundred and Trott and Strauss both getting single hundreds. And by the end, I remember Ricky Ponting trying, a few things like a short mid-on, a mid-on that stood almost on the pitch, and he got sledged by the Australian public for his tactics. But you do need to try things, because the great thing about the Gabba is, even if it does do something on the first day, I remember a great spell that Richard Hadley bowled Australia out, making the ball zip and swing around and bowling them out on the first day. But it does flatten out, and it is a great place to bat. Probably, I would say it's the best cricket pitch in the world, because it gives everybody a chance. Shane Warne has taken five wickets there. John Embry took five wickets there many years ago. So spinners definitely later in the game have a chance. Batsmen can fill their boots. And bowlers have hope, because not so much because it moves sideways, because there is a bit of bounce. On a traditional Gabba pitch, there is that little bit of lift, which discomforts visiting batsmen early on. Maybe it helped India, because, of course, the last Test match played at the Gabba, India won, chasing 320-odd, I think, against Australia in January. That was a tremendous run chase by India. But maybe they were helped by having played in Australia four previous tests and got used to occasionally a bit of extra bounce here and there. So I think it just hits you if you play the first test at the Gabba, you know, that just a bit of extra lift does discomfort you if you're not used to it. So that's why a lot of teams get caught out, and probably why Australia so often, invariably, play the first test, especially of an Ashes, at the Gabba.
Well, I think that's why they were really keen to play the first test at the Gabba as well. I mean, there was some talk that, you know, it shouldn't be at the Gabba because of the COVID situation, and you know, not everyone can get in. And the state of Queensland is not opening its borders until the day after the Gabba test match. When I say opening exporters, for, you know, to go there you have to quarantine, and, you know, lots of people are not prepared to do that and haven't done that. So lots of the broadcasts are coming from outside of Queensland. They're coming from Melbourne or from Sydney. So lots of people who want to be there aren't going to the Gabba for that very reason. So, but, you know, Cricket Australia very keen to play the first test match of the Gabba. Traditionally is played there in an Ashes series, because I think there is a perceived advantage for Australia, and, you know, they have got a tremendous record on that ground. Australia, of course, since we last spoke to you, since we last did a podcast, have named their team, which, you know, it's quite unusual, isn't it, to name a team, what, 3 days out from the start of the game. You know, we know that Travis Head is going to play, Usman Khawaja is not. We know that Mitchell Stark is going to play. There's a lot of talk that Jai Richardson would nip ahead of Mitchell Stark. That is not the case. So Australia making two changes from the last test match they played at the Gabba, that game against India in January. England, they haven't named their team. We had a press conference today. We're going to hear from Joe Root in just a moment. He was asked at one point in that press conference, he said, you know, Australia have gone for it. They've named their team. You know, are you just playing mind games, not telling us what your team is? And Joe Root, he just knocked that question back. He just said, We don't play mind games, Joe Root said that, and we're just not quite ready to name our team at the moment. So we, you know, I suppose the issues for England, who's going to bat six, Bairstow against Pope is one, and something we'll come on to in a minute when we hear from Mike Atherton about whether England go with a spinner or whether they go with five seamers. Let's hear from Joe Root. Yeah, he was talked about various things in his press conference. He asked about various things. He was asked about the absence of the Barmy Army. Normally, England get lots of support from the Barmy Army, go out there and travel and really give England lots of vocal backing. He was asked about Ben Stokes' role as a bowler and how much he's going to be able to bowl. But he started with the unique build-up to this series.
There's obviously been a very different build-up to this series and to this test match in particular. I just think more than anything, it's really important that mentally we're as prepared as we can be with the little cricket and match cricket that we've had coming into it. But I think we've planned very well for this. We've given ourselves the best possible chance with the opportunities we've had to play outside and to train outside. We just have to be, you know, full of confidence and trust all of the work that we've done leading into it. And we always really appreciate all the support we have whenever we play away from home. I'm sure that the Brisbane Barmies, if you like, they'll come out in force and do everything that they can to support us here at the Gabba. But yeah, it is an opportunity for us to get really tight and to stand up to that and you know, more than anything, is make sure that it doesn't affect the way that we go about things on the field. We just want to embrace that, enjoy the atmosphere and that sort of arena and try and thrive off it as much as we can. I suppose more than anything, you still got to manage the conditions that are in front of you. But I think that's the most important thing is understand the different passages of play that you might be faced with, practice it as best as you can leading into the game and into the series, and make sure you just feel as ready as you can for whatever's thrown at you. And as I said, I've been here previously, and I think from my own experiences, I probably put too much pressure on myself to come out here and have that bumper series, that massive series that everyone dreams of as a touring player here in these conditions. So it'd be just about trying to go about things as I have been over the last year and not almost over-focus on minor details like that, but also at the same time feel ready for the different challenges that playing here presents. I think more than anything, it's really good to just see Ben back involved in the frame of things and to see him come into the limited game time that we had and to look as good as he did as well. We always know that when he gets into that game, he'll want to put his mark on it and put his stamp on it. And I think, yes, there'll be an element of managing expectations. You've got to trust his experience and our whole bowling group that collectively we can work together to take those wickets. I'm sure Ben will have a big say in that. It's something that we'll definitely be making sure we try and get right throughout the whole series and in particular this first game.
So that was Joe Root speaking at his pre-match press conference today on Zoom. What about Stokes back then for England? It's a little bit gone under the radar with all the other things that have been going on, especially with Pat Cummins coming in as Australia's captain and, of course, the fallout from the Azeem Rafiq affair. He wasn't initially named in England's squad, but you know, we got a little indication because we thought they were going to name 17, they named 16. And he thought, hold on a second, I just wonder whether Ben Stokes is going to be included. Of course, he was. And England had one practice match so far. He picked up a couple of wickets and made 42. But what about his layoff? It's been so long, hasn't he? He's played so little cricket for such a long time. It's probably reasonable not to expect too much for him, or this is Ben Stokes, you know, expect a lot. What do you think?
Well, I think this is Ben Stokes. I think his inclusion is massive, both for England's morale lift and also for just the kind of effect it has on Australia. And if you think about it with Stokes, I mean, firstly, he's got unfinished business in Australia because he made his test debut over there, or at least played in his first Ashes series over there in the sort of that 2013 series, and made a very good 100 against Mitchell Johnson in the second innings at Perth. And then, of course, he didn't tour in 2017 because of his suspension. So he's got that kind of bit between his teeth. He wants to prove himself in Australia and they know what he can do after Headingley in 2019. And I just think from an all-round perspective, A, obviously, he's a quality batsman who will, you know, pose significant challenges to the Australian bowlers. He won't shirk the challenge. He won't be intimidated by anybody. If anything, he'll probably intimidate the bowlers a little bit. And obviously, with the ball, he's someone who can take wickets, who can get that bit of extra thrust. So if England only play their sort of medium pacers, as we kind of sort of generally lump Anderson, Broad, Wokes, Robinson together, he might potentially give them a bit more thrust with the ball, a bit of extra pace, a bit more aggression, and he can, you know, revert to that sort of round the wicket approach, bodyline type of approach if necessary, and also just in the field. He's a live wire. He's a brilliant catcher. He's an influence. He talked to Joe Root about ideas, and he's just a sort of uplifting presence. So, from all points of view, a massive inclusion. Yeah, we shouldn't expect too much, but I reckon he'll make his impact felt within a couple of tests.
Yeah, Chris Silverwood. Yeah, it's great to have him back. Of course, I think it does give a lift to the whole England party going to Australia with Stokes is just so different. They really did miss him last time. You just sensed the sort of deflationary effect on the squad. You know, Trevor Bayliss actually was saying the other day, you know, we had good enough players to do well, but did they without Stokes? Stokes is, you know, he is that X factor cricketer. Obviously, we know that. We saw it at Headingley. We saw it in the World Cup final, and I think having him in Australia as well, it just gives the series a massive lift. And Justin Langer was saying as much in his pre-match press conference, saying it's great to have him here, and it really does feel like a full-on Ashes without him. You know, without Jofra Archer, it just felt England came here would have come here a little bit underpowered. So you know, it creates an added ingredient, I think, to the series. Without him, it just wouldn't quite have been the same, as indeed it wasn't 4 years ago. But of course, what it does do is it does allow England to balance their attack. Now, the question is, and it's something we've been talking about, will they do that? Let's hear from Mike Atherton. He captained England in 12 Ashes Test matches. He brought England to Australia in 1994-5, a 3-1 defeat. He was in charge when England lost 3-2 at home in 97. And also for two tests in 2001. We started by asking him about the makeup of England's attack. A spinner and four pace bowlers, including Stokes, or five seamers. This is what others had to say.
If you imagine the conditions to be as per you'd expect at the Gabba, which is quite steamy, maybe humid, with a bit in it in the pitch on the first day, but generally good conditions, and if the forecast is fine, then I think England would want to play a spinner. I think Ben Stokes gives them that opportunity to balance the team. They play three seamers, Stokes and Leach as the spinner. If, however, they got to the Gabba on that morning and the forecast was horrendous for 5 days and you felt you were only going to be playing in a game that was going to, you know, have 2 days, maybe 3 days of cricket because of the weather, and the pitch was looking very green and juicy because of the rainfall that we'd had, I think it's an outside possibility that they might play an all-seam attack and, as you say, going with Root as a spinner. But I think fundamentally that's not what they'd want to do in Australia with a Kookaburra ball. We know how quickly that stops moving and goes soft. And the pitches tend to flatten out here in Australia pretty quickly. So generally, in normal conditions, I think Stokes would give them that ability to play the spinner. That's the way they'd want to go. In extreme conditions, they might play an all-seam attack, but only in extreme conditions.
I do see the series, others. I mean, it's been the most bizarre build-up to an Ashes series I can ever remember. I'm sure the same for you as well. But when sort of push comes to shove, when we get down to it, do you expect Australia to be a bit too strong for England?
The usual starting point is just a historic one, isn't it? How generally England struggle in Australia. You know, if you look after the Second World War, you go back 60, 70 years, England have won a handful of times here in Australia. You're looking at 54-5, 70-71, a couple of times against the Packer weakened sides at the end of the 70s, 86-87, 2010-11. It's a handful of occasions. So if you're smart and you go by history, your starting point is that England don't come here as favourites. That said, I agree with you. It's been an unbelievably tricky build-up for all kinds of reasons. COVID, Australia have hardly played any test cricket since the outbreak of the pandemic. This rain in Brisbane that has just scuppered any chance of either side having a half-decent preparation. Weather forecast suggests that we may get a shortened game in Brisbane, which may make it hard to get a result there. It looks like we won't go to Perth for the last test. So you can see some things coming to England's favour. If rain falls at the Gabba, if there's going to be two day-night test matches, possibly with another one at Melbourne at the end, no Perth where England usually struggle, you can see one or two factors just moving in England's direction. But broadly, you start, I think, from the point that Australia generally very strong and hard to beat at home. It doesn't look the greatest Australian team, but still fantastic cricketers in there, a top-class seam attack, two exceptional batsmen in Labuschagne and Smith, and Warner if he finds his form, and therefore, you know, not a bad Australian side either. So I think England have got it all to do for sure.
You've been inside, you know, many dressing rooms. How would a change of captain at such a late stage affect a team, or is it, well, does it really matter that much? Or, you know, it's two familiar faces. It's not someone coming in from the outside. They know Pat Cummins and they know Steve Smith. In a way, does it make that much difference?
Well, we'll see. I think it's not ideal for Australia, you know, for two reasons. One, the way that it happened with the pain thing, and, you know, people will have their different opinions on that. But I think there would have been general disquiet amongst the playing group in the kind of manner of how Tim Payne was let go, if you like. And secondly, just historically, fast bowlers tend not to captain test teams. I mean, how many out-and-out fast bowlers can you think of that have done the job in recent times? Willis did it for England in the early 80s after Brearley came back in for that series in 81 and a brief interlude from Keith Fletcher. Courtney Walsh has done it a bit for West Indies. I mean, lots of all-rounders have done it, fast bowling all-rounders. I'll talk like Pollock and Wasim Akram. Imran Khan, of course, was a fantastic captain of Pakistan. But out-and-out fast bowlers, there aren't too many. And it's, indeed, Australia have not had anybody since Lindwall, and that was for only one game in the mid-50s. So fast bowling is a hard physical grind. I don't see it being an easy job to captain and be one of the main strike bowlers as well. I mean, there's a reason why over 150 years of test cricket that fast bowlers generally have not captained teams. So I don't think it's going to be an easy task for Pat Cummins, but he's clearly a man of he's very able cricketer. He's a brilliant fast bowler. He's the number one ranked test bowler. Everybody says, who's met it, I don't know him well, but everybody says what a decent bloke he is. He's obviously highly respected. So he's got a lot of things in his favour, but I think he's got it all to do just because fast bowlers don't captain sides generally. I mean, what's his experience of captaincy? Just a handful of games, isn't it? So, yeah, it's not ideal, I don't think, for Australia.
Well, here's a question, Alex. I mean, you were up against Mark Taylor, but Joe Root and Pat Cummins, have two nicer men ever come up against each other in an Ashes series?
Well, that's true, isn't it? I mean, both are, as I said, I don't know Pat Cummins well, only by kind of reputation and just the odd hello here and there. But I mean, if you've read the gushing long profiles that have appeared in the Australian paper in the last 2 weeks and the Sydney Morning Herald this weekend, you know, he's got a lot to live up to. He's being built up as a man without...
St. Patrick, I've called him.
St. Patrick, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A man without flaw. But that's a difficult cross to bear from time to time. And he's actually played down those expectations a bit, hasn't he? He's dampened down those expectations, which I think is a smart thing to do because... You know, who is perfect? None of us really. But you're right, Pat Cummins and Joe Root, two lovely guys, two top-class players. You're looking at, you know, the elite of the elite, really, in the world game. And let's hope both of them can, you know, have the attitude to go out and play a game of cricket, because I think people in both countries need that lift. It's such a horrendous time at the moment with COVID and this new variant and people locked down. It's a pretty depressing time. And of course, that's really what sport is there to do. It's to take people away from the nonsense of daily life and give them a lift. So let's hope both these teams can do that.
So just following on from that, do you think we're going to have a sort of a friendlier Ashes series, or do you think when it comes to it on that first morning, it'll all kick off again, that old Anglo-Australian rivalry, a sort of default position will kick in?
It's going to be a hard fought series, there's no question of that. I haven't yet seen an Ashes series that's not been hard fought. But I do think, I mean, I think what you're getting at, if you recall before the last series, Nathan Lyon did that slightly strange press conference, didn't he, on the eve of the Ashes, where he talked about ending careers and all that kind of thing. I do sense it'll be slightly different because of, I think, both the captains who are running the show. And also cricket in the last few years, from what I've seen, whether it's the consequence of, you know, players playing together in the franchise competitions as they do, you know, the likes of Bairstow and Warner opening the batting together for Sunrisers Hyderabad, you get to know these players in a way probably that you didn't get to know them before. So I suspect it won't go overboard, and I hope it doesn't. I've always, you know, hoped to see hard competitive cricket, but I don't believe there's a place for, you know, preordained sledging or abuse or whatever you want to call it. I've always felt that, you know, you've got red-blooded men out there who are competitive and want to do well, and just occasionally things will boil over, and I don't have a problem with that. Once it's a product of kind of, once it's organic and as a product of the action. So if I go back to myself and Alan Donald, you know, that famous occasion, that was a consequence of just some very hard competitive cricket. It wasn't a case of either of us going out preordained intent to abuse each other. So I have no problems with when things boil over from time to time, which they will always do in international sport. And as long as both teams go out with the right and fair attitude to play hard and fair, I think that's fine.
Well, that was Michael Atherton talking, actually, in our virtual cricket club. He was a guest of ours on Saturday night. And we've actually got a watch along in the virtual cricket club on Tuesday night. If you want to join us to watch the first session of play and chat about it as well, we've got some interesting characters in our virtual cricket club. And you can join us by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com. It's in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. And we have a weekly interview with a player. The next interviewee is going to be Mike Hussey, actually. Not quite sure what day, but sometime during the test match or right immediately after it, we're going to get Mike Hussey, Mr. Cricket, as he was often known, to chat about the upshot of the first test match. And one of the things Athers was talking about there was that, I suppose, you know, he didn't use the word sledging, but it was kind of talking about the verbal jousting that goes on in Ashes test matches in particular. And it's going to happen again, isn't it? Because it is a confrontational series. They're hot-blooded players. And actually, as long as it's in keeping with the kind of the tempo of the game and the atmosphere of the game, you feel it's fine. If it gets a bit personal, then I remember there was some rather nasty stuff said in the last series, actually. I think from one or two of the Aussie towards Johnny Bairstow, for instance. And one hopes that doesn't happen. But you do want to see that little bit of hot-headed confrontation between players, don't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting debate. Do you or don't you? I mean, I always have this thing that if no one said anything on the field, would the game be would the game be diminished as a result? You know, probably not. But I mean, you bowlers, you can't help talking, can you? You can't help sort of chatting away to a batsman and just trying to sort of undermine him and just pick away at his technique. But I think, yeah, inevitably there are going to be those moments, those flare-ups. I suppose if they do happen organically, rather than, yeah, that it's that premeditated attacks that, you know, you really can't take and can't stand. And it has happened in the past, and you're right, it did happen in that last series, David Warner against Johnny Bairstow. That, you know, that was one thing that happened. Just talking about David Warner, what are going to be the main matchups in this series? Okay, where is the series going to be won and lost? I mean, there's obviously the Broad against Warner confrontation, which we're looking forward to. There's the two captains going head to head, which you don't always see, of course, because it's not often that a bowler is a captain. So Cummins versus Root. There's also Stokes against Lyon. That battle rejoined after Headingley 2019. But, you know, Lyon bowling to the left-hander, you know, that would be interesting to see as well. Are those three that we should look at? And are there other things as well? I mean, we haven't mentioned Steve Smith. Steve Smith against anyone that comes in and bowls at him. You know, there's that as well, isn't there? After, you know, last time, it just seemed we spent the whole of the last Ashes series in Australia watching Steve Smith bat. It was like a personal net, you know. It was utterly relentless. So how do you see things?
I'm going to play you some music first. Just listen to a little bit of this.
Big elephants on parade, here they come, hippity-hoppity, they're here, and there, big elephants everywhere. Look out, look out, they're walking around the bed, on their head, clippity-clippity, parade, in parade, big elephants on parade.
What'll I do, what'll I do, what an unusual view.
Now that is the song from Dumbo, the great Disney movie.
Where are we going with this, Charles?
I'll tell you where we're going with it. It's a song called Pink Elephants on Parade. And basically, I'm sure many of you will remember this scene, Dumbo having a dream, and he's dreaming of his species expanding and multiplying and marching across the sky. and gradually suffocating, trampling on him and suffocating him and, you know, kind of shutting all the light out of him. It's a nightmare, basically. And where are we going with this? Well, I suppose I just think after Warner's experience in 2019 against Stuart Broad, when Broad took him seven times, Warner averaged 9.5 in the series, which is the worst ever average by an opening batsman in an Ashes series who played all five Test matches. He averaged five against Broad, who I think bowled 104 balls to him, and he only scored off about six of them, and obviously was out seven times. So, you know, that Broad v Warner thing is massive. And Warner, despite coaches saying to him, look, you average 60 against England in Australia and you average 63 in Australia generally, and, you know, you love the Gabba and you made a couple of hundreds there a couple of years ago and all that. You know, but despite all that, Warner will know Broad has his number, and Broad has been all over him over the last series and a half. And it's not only a technical thing, it's a mental thing as well. Technically, Warner tried to change his method. He started on off stump in that series in 2019, his guard, he got LBW, then he reverted back to sort of middle and leg and he got caught behind, then he went over to off stump again and got LBW, then he went back to leg stump and got caught behind. So it really messed around with his alignment, that Broad skill from round the wicket, and that's going to be in his mind again. And so I feel Broad could easily repeat that dose by his skill from round the wicket. Obviously, the key will be the first 10 overs, because we all know the Kookaburra ball does a fair bit. It does enough, let's say, in the first 10 overs, but after that, it doesn't do a lot. So you've got to strike in those first 10 overs against those opening batsmen. And Warner will be nervous. He'll be apprehensive, despite his great record in Australia.
So if Warner doesn't get any runs, there's still Labuschagne and Steve Smith to come. I mean, that's a pretty solid three and four. It's stronger than England's three or four, despite the fact that, you know, Joe Root is there, who's obviously England's main card. I mean, there are two quality players coming in, you know, after the opener. So if the openers can see off the new ball, you know, then there's a lot to come. I mean, what about Smith? You know, he's been quiet for a while. I mean, he's having to play a lot of T20, and that's not really his game, is it? It's not really his forte. But, you know, this is a man England are absolutely sick of the sight of in Ashes cricket.
Obviously, he's an exceptional player. He's one of the greats. Extraordinary record over the last 4 or 5 years. He hasn't played a Test innings or even a first class innings since January this year, which was that India Test match at Brisbane. He played a pretty good hand in that series. I think he made 100 in one game from memory, and he could have easily got a second 100. He got run out, last man out. Brilliant bit of fielding by Ravi Jadeja. So, I mean, Smith is an exceptional player, but he's fallible like everybody else. And the key for England will be to strike in that first 10 or 15 overs and expose Smith to a newer ball, because if the ball gets older, it's not going to be easy getting him out. I thought it was quite interesting. I read some quotes from Ollie Robinson, actually, who's clearly a keen analyst of the game, saying he'd looked at Smith's interception points, where he strikes the ball, and he plays the ball a lot later, a lot further back in his crease than most. So the length has to be a bit fuller. I think, yes, draw him forward. He's completely his element. If you bowl back of a length or even a length, he's on the back foot, just working it around, almost sort of toying with the bowlers. But if you just draw him into drives, I don't think he's quite as comfortable. So you want to try and lure him forward if you can and hope to get a bit of movement either way. And yeah, I mean, England's tactics will be interesting to see. They didn't stick with the idea of a leg slip after about the first 10 overs at Edgbaston in that Test match in 2019, and he could easily have got out there. So they might need some unconventional tactics against him. But in the main, you know, if the ball moves a little bit off the straight on a round off stump on a foolish length, it's going to get anybody out. So I think initially I will be looking to try and bring middle and off stumps into play for potential LBWs, but also that off stump line trying to get the ball to leave him, because that's probably the best way of getting him out.
Couple of milestones to look forward to: Stuart Broad, his 150th Test match, and Nathan Lyon is one short of 400 Test wickets. He was hoping to get in that series against the Indies. Had to wait a long time, actually, for another crack at his 400th wicket. How important is he to Australia, and how should England play him? Should they look to attack him and try and not quite hit him out of the attack, but re-put the pressure back on him? Or is he such a good bowler, as is indicated by 399 wickets, that it's not as easy as that? It really is not as easy to do that as it might be to say it.
Well, you know, Australia look to play a four-man attack generally, though obviously they've got Cameron Green as their fifth bowler, who's no slouch. But they've got a four-man main attack, and Lyon is key to that, because after the first 25 overs, he bowls, wheels away from one end, and the pacemen come from the other. And it allows them to bowl the pacemen in short spells where they can be quite aggressive. So Lyon is absolutely vital. How do England play him? I think they play him mainly off the back foot. I think they look to milk him rather than try and whack him. The Indians played him pretty well, and he didn't get too many wickets. Pujara struggled against him because he was lunging and trying to kick him away. But anybody who plays him off the back foot with that little bit of extra bounce that he gets is normally fairly comfortable. I don't see Root having any problems with Lyon. He's a fantastic player of spin. And the thing about Nathan Lyon, which is different from many off spinners, is he doesn't get the drift away from the right-hander. He angles the ball in and then spins it in a bit more and gets the bounce, but he doesn't get that drift that someone even like Moen Ali does, the drift away, then drawing the batsman into a shot and then spinning it back. So he's obviously not unplayable, but I think the best approach is to just knock him around, work him around so that he doesn't build up pressure. England were a bit strokeless against him in past series. Be positive without being reckless.
And just finally, Oz, where are England most vulnerable in this series? Top order, top three, do you think? Or do you think David Milan's inclusion has sort of bolstered them at the top? He was actually the leading run scorer in the last...
Milan is a good player. I worry about the openers, definitely, because I think that Hazib Hamid is not... I don't think he really plays the short ball that well. When I say short ball, I'm not necessarily saying bouncers, but just back of the length balls, which are kind of lifting into the waist and sort of rib cage area. I don't think he plays that very well. Obviously, he's very determined and he's got a good overall technique, but I think he'll be vulnerable to the high quality fast bowlers that Australia have. Mitchell Starc is a very valuable asset to them because he can swing the ball back in as well to the right-handers. So I do worry about Hazib Hamid and also Rory Burns, who hasn't, to me, looked confident against the bouncer either, and he's going to get peppered. And he hasn't quite worked out whether to fend it off, to hook it, to leave it, to duck it, whatever. So if he's got that sort of clarity in his mind to know how to play that kind of ball, maybe he'll have a good series. But I haven't seen any evidence of that so far. So that just worries me, that the opening pair. After that, England are pretty good.
What about England's bowling attack? We talked about the vulnerability possibly at the top of the order. I do go back to the last Test match that England played against India at the Oval, where England had a 100-run first innings lead, but on a decent pitch. India dug in and England had this four-man attack. It was all a bit samey and they weren't able to dislodge India for a low enough score to go on and win the game despite that first innings advantage. You know, you have got Jimmy Anderson, who's 39. You have got Stuart Broad, who's 35, and then Robinson, and then whatever the configuration is going to be, whether it's going to be a spinner with Ben Stokes as well, or whether it's going to be five seamers, we'll wait and see on that. What about the potential to get at Australia among England's pace attack?
It's really difficult to say. It depends on the pitch. If there's a little bit in that surface, then England have a pretty good attack. If it doesn't do anything, they'll rely massively on Stokes. And that's the point. England didn't have Stokes in that Test match at the Oval against India. And he does add something. He adds that extra ingredient to pace and aggression, which, apart from Mark Wood, England don't really have anywhere else. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's not the ideal attack, perfect attack for Australia. You would want an archer or someone who can just rough up the batsman occasionally to give something different, to almost to take the pitch out of the equation sometimes. England haven't got that, but they've got men who've taken 500 Test wickets, and they've got Ollie Robinson, who I think is an emerging force in the Test match game. So not a bad attack, but they need runs at their back to be able to bowl with.
Yeah. Well, the slate is clean. It's nil-nil, although Australia do have the advantage, of course, because they only have to draw the series to retain the Ashes. There's always excitement in the lead-up to an Ashes series, albeit it's been a unique Ashes series. We should just remind people of our predictions. You went for 3-1 to Australia.
I went as well.
3-1 to Australia, and Mike Atherton went for 3-1 to Australia as well. That's how I actually had a look at the odds the other day. That is actually how that is the favourite scoreline for the series. That's how, you know, the majority of people, most people are sort of betting on this series, see it. That is the favourite scoreline, 3-1. But of course, England have lost 9 of the last 10 Test matches they played in Australia. It's going to be a challenge for them. But inevitably, I think at the start of the series, you go in with a sense of excitement because the story hasn't unfolded yet. But it's going to start unfolding on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Australia, and we can't wait. We've been building up for a long. Yeah. It feels like England have been building up to forever and ever. Actually, they've been talking about it for a heck of a long time now.
I must say, Jimmy Anderson in his Daily Telegraph column said that he's never felt less prepared for any test series, never mind the Ashes, because of the lack of bowling. But which makes, of course, predictions a total mug's game. But anyway, we've given you our best shot. Don't shoot us down later if we're totally wrong. Just to say, we've created this NFT collection, which I mentioned the other day on the podcast, the Ashes Heroes NFT. That stands for non-fungible token, basically digital art, which you can own as a collectible, and you get some various benefits with that. We've already sold one, actually. We've sold David Steele already, who was number 100 in the Ashes Heroes rankings. David Steele, who, of course, was the BBC Sportsman Stand of the Year for his efforts in the 1975 Ashes. And there are 99 more NFTs of Ashes Heroes to buy. If you go and have a look at the ashesheroes.com website, or you can join our Twitter feed at Ashes Heroes and have your own say on who you think are the heroes of the past and perhaps the heroes of the future too. And don't forget also, you can join us for that watch along if you join our club at worldsbestcricketclub.com, the watch along on Tuesday night for the first couple of hours. We might even get your commentary up, Simon, as well, as an extra little bonus for people.
Okay, well, yeah, good. Do that, because I'll be on Test Match Special on Tuesday night from 11 o'clock with Aggers and Stephen Finn and Ian Chappell and Jim Maxwell and Tuffers and Dan Norcross. They'll be joining us as well. Really looking forward to it. And we will be reviewing each day's play on this feed on the Analyst Inside Cricket podcast after the day's play has finished. And one new feature for this series is we're going to predict the score at the end of the next day's play, and we're going to keep a tally throughout the series between Yozza and I to see who is the best predictor. But as you say, it is a bit of a mug's game, but we'll have some fun. Well, it's going to be fun, whatever happens. Even if it's 5-0, it's going to be, well, perhaps it's not going to be so much fun if it's going to be 5-0, because actually what we want is a competitive series. Anyway, it's about to get underway. I hope you're looking forward to it. We are. We'll speak to you again soon. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening.
Ain't concerned. We give you an awful fright. What a sight.
Chase them away. Chase them away. I'm afraid. Need your aid. Big elephants on parade.
Sports Social Podcast Network.